The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for coming by the show. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're going to be talking about D.C., but we're going to be talking about the dynamics of Homeland Security, emergency management, and trying to understand how does D.C. prepare for the number of different things we have to deal with, special events, if there's any place that has special events and that we are concerned about maybe acts of terrorism or anything else, is D.C. If there's anything in terms of our nation's capital, we've got all the leaders in this town, but we've got our special guest right here. This is the man who deals with all these different threats, whether it be an emergency threat or whether it be acts of God or whether it be concerned about terrorism. We've got Chris Geldart in here. Let me make sure I got it right. Chris Geldart.
That's correct.
Is that right? And he's director of D.C.'s Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency. And he's also the interim director of the Office of Unified Communications for D.C. They do all the 911 calls. I think that, what, 311?
Yes, sir.
And they do all the different calls. So when you got to call in for an emergency or get some information, this man is also in charge of that office. Welcome to Fed Access, Chris.
Thank you, Derek. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're glad to have you. Hey, talk to us about, you know, the office. I mean, some people, when they hear about D.C. and they hear Homeland Security Emergency Management Agency, sometimes you'll see that kind of blue van, that blue truck or something like that. You'll wonder, who are these guys?
Our big blue
truck. Talk about that.
Yes, sir. So the agency is has been around for quite some time.
Okay.
You know, it's a pre-9/11 agency. The Emergency Management Agency is where it started.
Okay.
Most big cities have their emergency management agencies. Most big cities don't face some of the things we do. They have other challenges, but we've been around for quite a while. You know, the agency handles everything from when we don't have big emergencies happening to the preparedness of the city. How well are we preparing? How well are we able to do things in coordination, not only with the other district agencies and bring the district together as things happen, but also with all of our partner agencies and our surrounding jurisdictions. You know, the district's not the biggest city. We do have a lot of resources and assets, but we also do need our local folks around the jurisdictions from Arlington, Prince George's County, Montgomery County, also our Fed our partners that are here as well. We do a lot with the Capitol Police and Park Police and Park Service. So Secret Service, FBI, we're constantly working with all those folks, whether it be in preparedness and getting ready for things that may happen and be prepared, or during real world events or in planned events that we do.
You know, you just mentioned something, because if there's any place that seems to have kind of an interagency dynamic, it's got to be D.C. I mean, D.C., you know, of course, doesn't have the statehood and all this other kind of stuff. But what do you find that to be challenging, or do you find that the partners come to the table pretty easily when you call, especially at the special event? And also, are you the lead agency when we have these special events? I know sometimes Secret Service in charge, or who? What's the jurisdiction when it comes into that kind of stuff?
You know, it's a great question. We do work with all the agencies here, and we work so much together between the Metropolitan Police Department, the Fire and Emergency Medical Services, our agency, the Department of Health, and several other district agencies work day in and day out with our federal partners. So it really is a great relationship that we have. Many folks have been working together for decades in that area. So when it's either in the preparedness phases or something, no notice happens or a planned event, we pretty much know each other. And your question about who's in charge, that all depends on the time of the day and what's happening and where it's happening.
Gotcha.
But to be honest, you know, we work in a thing called unified command here most of the time on most of the events that we do. And that unified command really says, okay, so this agency, whether it be federal or district, may have the lead at this particular time in an event, but that may change throughout the event. And we work very well in that unified command. We do it almost on a daily basis around here.
Would you how many events, you know, Chris, is your agency dealing with? I mean, you kind of had to put it in a kind of a, you know, the quantity of what you're dealing with on maybe a daily or even yearly basis or monthly. What would you say the numbers are?
Sure. There's a couple of ones. And again, it's not just our agency.
Yeah.
It's all the district agencies. Not one can pull it alone. I mean, we've got a great Metropolitan Police Department, the officers out there on the ground doing great work every day. Same thing with our Fire and Emergency Medical Services. But when things happen, when we have either large planned events, unplanned events, as you said earlier, acts of God or nature, when those things happen, it really is a team effort. There is no one agency that stands up and does it all. So we all pull together as a team. And when you look at, you know, the course of a year around the district, we're pulling at least one national special security event, and that would be for the President's Joint Address to Congress for every year in January. But we're usually doing at least one or two national special security events a year. We've done, in that program itself, there's been 50 events, 48, I think exactly, events that have been designated a national special security event from the beginning of the program in 1995.
Wow.
27 of those 48 have happened here in the District of Columbia. So we do a lot of those kind of events.
Yeah.
If you just look, though, at the other special events that happen around the city, we are constantly, especially during the spring, summer, and fall timeframes, a lot of special events, a lot of block parties, a lot of parades, a lot of runs, a lot of different events of things like that that we do. We're doing hundreds of events a year. Where we're pulling agencies together, we're all getting together, we're making sure we have good, solid plans, we understand what everybody's lanes are, and then we work together in unified command to make sure it's executed good for the folks that are coming here to enjoy themselves.
You know, what's your background, Chris, before you got to, you know, this role right here? I mean, where did you come? Did you, was it FEMA? Did you come out of emergency management, fire? Where did you come out of?
Sure. I'll go back to where I started. As a young man, as a United States Marine, I was in the Marine
Semper
Corps.
Fi.
Thank you, sir.
All right. I know, did you know I was in the Marine Corps?
I did not.
I was also Marine Corps.
There you
Semper
go, Semper Fi.
All right.
You, Marine.
Outstanding.
I did 12 years in the United States Marine Corps, active duty. After that, received my degree from the University of Maryland, College Park. Went to work for Booz Allen here in the nation's capital area, and did some work with them for a couple of years, and was lucky enough to be able to serve the residents of Maryland as the Deputy Director for Homeland Security. I worked that for about 4 years, then left there, went to FEMA, was the Director of the Office of National Capital Region Coordination at FEMA. Worked there for about 3 years, did the first inauguration for President Obama, which was a very large event for us here. Left there, started my own company for a while, and then had the opportunity to come to work for the great residents of the District of Columbia in 2012, and I've been in the role since.
You know, as you look at things, and I'm glad you even told me, of course, I'm going to give you some more love because you're a Marine. So, but as you look at things and kind of, you know, from where you've come from, you've been around the different areas and different the states and also kind of served on that national, that military dynamic of kind of operations and everything else. I mean, where do you see that the game has changed in terms of kind of emergency management? You know, I mean, where do you see, you know, and it may be since 9/11, it may be since Katrina, it may be since whatever the case is. But where do you see that the changes have happened in this business?
Well, emergency management is a relatively young field when you look at it across the board. You know, FEMA didn't come into existence until the 70s. You know, you go back before that and you're really talking about civil defense and how that was set up throughout the country. But I think from the civil defense days into the emergency management days, I think we've become to understand what that field is and what the necessity of it is at the local level, state level, and federal level. And I think we've all grown through that process. You know, I've been involved in the field now for going on 15 years. And I would say that as we go through the years, the maturation process, the training and education and abilities for folks to learn the field and become professionals in the field is really just now starting to come on.
Okay.
You have master's programs.
You're starting to see these degree programs that weren't there before.
Right. And that's pushing the whole industry. Mm-hmm. It really is. And I think we have a ways to go. If you look at it in terms of policing or firefighting or, you know, some of those other fields, we don't have the history of it. We don't have the NFPA National Fire Protection Act type of stuff that's driven us, but that's coming, and it's coming along. And I think that, you know, there's a place for emergency management, particularly in areas like the counties and the states, to really organize, help organize the team of folks that come together to respond to things from government.
You know, when you think about, you know, emergency management, you think about, like you said, the maturity of the field and as it's growing. What I want to talk about, and we got to take a quick break, but what I want to talk about when we get back is, you know, some people try to figure out what exactly is emergency management, what exactly is Homeland Security, and even with the dynamic of Homeland Security, when we think about that, you know, people wonder, well, on a state level, they hear about the federal level of DHS and they hear about all the different agencies, but what does that include on a state level? I mean, what does that mean, you know, when they hear about this in the states and in the D.C.? What do you guys do as it relates to Homeland Security? I want to talk about that so people can understand that more. We're talking to Chris Geldart. He's director of D.C.'s Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency. If you go into Google and type in D.C. H-S-E-M-A, you will find it, or you can spell it out. But they will be on there, and they have a lot of good information on their website. Things about hurricanes, things about preparedness, things about kind of what's going on in the district that you can find out. It's a great site. They even got an app. I have it on my phone, as a matter of fact. We'll talk about it later. But they've got an app that you can find information about what's going on if you're a district resident or you work in the district. So it keeps you abreast, traffic information, disasters, whatever's going on. We'll talk about these things, but he's in charge of these things. And he's also the interim director of the Office of Unified Communications. We're going to be kind of finding out more about what DC Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency does when we come back. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about Homeland Security and emergency management, but not on a federal level. We've been talking about it on a local level, on the D.C. level, trying to understand the dynamics of, you know, the emergency management aspect of the city, the homeland aspect, the Homeland Security aspect of the city, and how does this thing all work? D.C. has its own agency, and we're talking to the director, Chris Geldart. He's director of D.C.'s Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency. Again, if you type in DC H-S-E-M-A on Google, anywhere else, it'll come up, or you can just type in Homeland Security Emergency Management for DC. It'll come up. He's also the interim director for the Office of Unified Communications. We're going to find out a little bit more about what they're doing later on the show. Chris, you know, when we were talking, a lot of people kind of hear about Homeland Security, but they think about, you know, the federal aspect, DHS. They think about Secret Service, Coast Guard. They think about the dynamics of, you know, all the agencies that come under that, border protection and everything else. When we look at Homeland Security on a local level, on a state level, because now you see even local cities having a Homeland Security component, right? What does that mean?
So for the district, and thanks, Dirk, by the way. So for the district, we, as you mentioned earlier in the show, we're not a state, but in many ways we're treated like a state. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in my arena, it's in many others. So in the education arena, we have basically what equates to a state superintendent of education. For our Department of Transportation, we're doing federal grants for federal highways, things that states would do, normal cities don't do. We do that here in the district as well. For example, in my case, every state has a Homeland Security advisor. Mm. I'm the Homeland Security advisor for the mayor for the district, and every governor has a Homeland Security advisor. And we look at, you know, the key things out there in the states, or in our case, the district, on things like interoperability, cybersecurity, how we're doing, you know, our preparedness, and we're making sure that we're following a good, rigorous path to ensure that our state, in this case, the district, and if it's okay with you, I'll call it a state, is prepared for the things that
keep
it needs
that fight
to
alive.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, you know, we do many roles of that as the emergency manager as well. The mayor can declare a state of emergency and then seek a presidential disaster declaration, just like a governor can. Other cities can't. They need to go through their states to do that. So many ways we're unique in that aspect. So it adds in a pretty unique dynamic that we have here in the district, which is we have those state roles that we need to do. But at the same time, we are, you know, just off the ground, right? So we have the Department of Public Works that's actually doing the snow removal, the trash removal, the things like that they do, the debris removal if we're talking about a disaster. And when in many states, you know, they have to go to their localities to get into that level of service for the residents of their states. So we're lucky in those cases. We have that direct connection. At the same time, We're pulling both roles, so it's a unique environment.
When you look at it, I see you also have a council, like a Homeland Security Council.
Yes,
I mean, do they advise you on matters in terms of kind of thinking about the district and Homeland Security? What is that about?
Yes, sir. So we actually have a great group of folks, very knowledgeable in Homeland Security, in the Homeland Security area, and knowledgeable of the city. They do advise. They take a look at different areas. For the city, for example, their first report was on cybersecurity and some recommendations on what the city should be doing to ensure we have a good cybersecurity plan and we are in a good place. They came forward with those recommendations, and many of them the district has taken into account and have attempted to enact most of them. Their second report they're just ready to come out with is more of a look on the public health side and how we're doing on public health. And the great thing about that group that we have for our commission is they really are subject matter experts in the different fields. So we had cybersecurity experts for the last one, and for this one we have some folks that are really good experts, nationally and internationally known experts, telling us, you know, here are some things to consider as you're doing your public health outlook for security and safety.
You know, I've heard this conversation come up more and more about public health, about people being concerned about either outbreaks or a number of different things. What's going on with emergency management as it relates to that? I mean, when I heard you say that, this just kind of dawned on me, because I hear that conversation is going more and more. We had the Ebola scare and everything else. What's going on with that?
So, you know, an emergency management agency really looks at how do you deal with the consequences of something that's happened? So you take a look and you say, what threats are we susceptible to? And then how do we put things in place to mitigate some of those threats and to mitigate them the best we can? So that's a job of the emergency management side. The Homeland Security side, very similar to that, looking at what are the issues that we have out there and how do we put things in place to prepare for it? You know, and so the job, you know, so when you ask, what's Homeland Security doing about this? Well, what we do is we work with our partner agencies, the different district agencies that have roles within these things. For example, you brought up Ebola. When you look at Ebola, you're talking about you're engaging at a minimum four district agencies if a case were to break out like that. Clearly, public health has the lead on it, but you're going to have our fire and emergency medical services being involved in that as they go out to, they may be the first ones that come in contact with it. And then you're going to have the Metropolitan Police Department, who they could be right there with the fire and emergency medical services on the ground. They're going to come in contact with it. You have our agency that's going to help, you know, bring together the folks and say, what's our combined response across the city and how are we engaging with that? How are we communicating with the public? And how are we planning to deal with this case that we have or any other cases we may have from it? Mm-hmm. And it really is a combined effort of how do you bring the folks together and ensure that, you know, look, the fire folks know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. The police know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Our public health folks know what they're doing, and they're all professionals in their field. Mm-hmm. But when they need to come together to work together across the board, that's really where an emergency management agency comes in to say, okay, how do we take a look at this, not only from our individual pieces, but then across the board?
You know, when we think about this and kind of thinking about Homeland Security and everything else, are you also, I mean, are you talking to, you know, the federal level? Are you getting funds from the federal level? Is DC Homeland Security, when we look at that, is there funding that comes from the federal side, or this is all local funding? I mean, how does that work as it relates to it? I know they give out grants for certain things. Where does that relationship kind of tie into itself?
Another great question. You know, we... The Homeland Security Emergency Management Agency is the state administrative agent for Homeland Security grants, not only for the District of Columbia, but also for the National Capital Region.
Okay.
So all of the Homeland Security grants, whether it be the state homeland, the Emergency Management Performance Grant, or our Urban Area Security Initiative grant, comes in through the District of Columbia. And then we work with our partners to say, what are those areas that we want to build capability in where these grant dollars could best go to use? And we bring the folks together to do that. One of the things we've created since we've been here is our emergency response system. We call it ERS. And we bring the folks in all of the emergency response areas and pretty much all of the response agencies of the district together on a monthly basis to look at where do we stand on our capabilities to respond, recover, mitigate, or do prevention and protection. And we look at those capabilities and we say, here's where we want to be. here's where we are today, here's the delta, and how do we get through that delta? Mm-hmm. And it is a mixture of funds. It's a mixture between local funds appropriated here through the district, through our budgets. It's using grant funds. It's reaching out and finding other grant funds that may be out there that we could apply to it. But we have the plan. Now we try to fund to the plan. And to that end, we do pretty well here in the district, not as well as New York or LA do, as the National Capital Region, we bring in about $56 million worth of federal grants per year. And now, of course, that goes to the region, not just to the district, so we're a piece of that.
Sure.
You know, folks, places like New York are pulling in about $185 million a year. So, you know, we're constantly trying to talk with the federal government to say, you know, we're at pretty good risk here too. So if you can, you know, get us to a similar level. But that's pretty much how we fund the things and look at it. And our ERS system, which is going on its third year, is really starting to take traction and really look at these things in a systematic way to say, if we need to evacuate 15,000 people from a certain place, how do we do that? And what resources do we need? And what's the plan to do it? And that's what our ERS folks work on.
You know, when you talk about the NCR, what, you know, a lot of people will wonder, what does, how far does that stretch out? You know, what, you know, where do you stop the NCR? Is it Baltimore? Is it Anne Arundel County? Is it Fairfax? I mean, what's all included in the National Capital Region?
So the Congress actually put it in statute and fully defined what the National Capital Region is. And for the intents and purposes of that, as we come together, we bring together the counties of Loudoun, Prince William, Fairfax, Arlington, Alexandria, and then in suburban Maryland, we bring in Montgomery County and Prince George's County, and of course the district being in the center of that.
Okay,
and that truly constitutes what we look at from the Urban Area Security Initiative perspective as the National Capital Region.
And then with all of that, you're working with your partners, so even with the ERS or anything else, if you, like you said, the evacuation plan, if you needed to tap into people from the NCR, you know, in Montgomery County, we've got these resources. In Loudoun County, we've got the, is that how it works?
Sure. Through the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments, which is a host place for us, we have some governance in there. And what we do is we bring together the emergency managers with the emergency managers, the fire chiefs with the fire chiefs, police chiefs with the police chiefs. So there's different committees within that that come together. And then we cross-pollinate within those committees to say, you know, here are the areas we really need to work on things. And through that structure, we have a pretty good understanding, just like we do with our ERS. You know, Northern Virginia has their ERS, and we look at these things, and as does Maryland. And we say, how do we build this capability across the region so that when we do have things, as you said, we can rely on each other to provide that mutual aid aspect that we need to get from each other.
We're talking to Chris Geldart. He's director of DC's Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency. He's also the interim director of Office of Unified Communications. They're the one who handle all your 911 calls, all your 311 calls, and get you the information or get you the resources you need if you're dealing with an emergency or anything else. We're going to keep on talking about and learning a lot more about this agency, what they're doing, and also learning about what are the concerns for the district and how we're handling those concerns, the current concerns, and also maybe the future concerns that we're dealing with, whether it be terrorism or hurricanes or whatever, snow removal or whatever the case is. How do we make sure the district stays safe and the National Capital Region stays safe and sound for all people who are living in it? We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Homeland Security. We're talking about emergency management, but not on a federal level. We're talking about it on a DC level, on a local level, on a National Capital Region level, talking about what's going on and then who are the agencies involved in this. We're talking to the director of DC's Homeland Security Emergency Management Agency, Chris Geldart. He's also the interim director of the Office of Unified Communications, where you get your 911 calls and your 311 calls as well. And he is the person who's breaking things down for us and helping us understand what does DC do as it relates to Homeland Security and also emergency management, a growing field, a maturing field right now about how you deal with certain things. And we'll be talking about that very, very soon. Chris, before we go to emergency management, I kind of want to stay on Homeland Security for one more second.
Sure.
You guys got a you know, that whole program that came up after 9/11 called these fusion centers.
Yes, sir.
You know, I think under yours is kind of the Washington Regional Tactical Analysis Center.
The Threat Analysis Center, yep.
Talk to us about these fusion centers and what they do and the impact on them and have they been proven to be effective?
It's another great question, Derek, and I'll say that the Fusion Center in the district has gone through a lot of different phases. The current state that it's in now is one that we are really looking at a holistic approach to what we do for the intelligence and analysis functions that need to happen. This kind of hits on a couple of things that you were mentioning earlier, the difference between Fed, state, and local. And when you look at it, the federal level has a perspective that they're looking at things internationally, nationally, but then you have the state and local who are really down there on the ground, who are doing law enforcement investigations, responses to things, receiving the threats in many cases to certain things. And that's what these fusion centers really look at, is that tactical level on the ground. And we do strategic, but at the level of a city like the district, or New York or other areas. So the Fusion Center really came into its own in 2012, and we expanded it out to take an all hazards mission.
Okay.
So it's not just a law enforcement centric, but it's also looking at public health. It's looking at emergency management. It's looking at fire.
Okay.
And the folks that are in there, great group of folks. We were very lucky to hire on a good leader for the organization, who's actually an MPD employee, detailed over to the agency. And then our deputy director, who we stole shamelessly from the Federal Bureau of Investigation and their counterterrorism unit, really works on the analytical products that we do and builds out our analysts and all that. And, you know, primarily what we're doing.
And let me just throw a plug. I had to have a chance to meet Tip and Jarena. I came over for your orientation.
That's right.
And they kind of went over all the things that they're doing. And you guys are doing a lot of stuff in the Fusion Center in terms of the products that you're giving out,
right,
not only for the law enforcement of the people, but for business community and everybody else.
Right. And they're doing great. And I'll say we are very lucky as the residents of the district to have them on board. And I've got to give a shout out to the chief of police, who helped that process and ensured that we had a really good process from the beginning. Of doing this, of setting up the Fusion Center how it is now, and continues to be a part of that. The two of them really have built out the Fusion Center. And as you mentioned, as we look at this all hazards approach, many Fusion Centers have folks that come in that help advise from different areas. Many of them have the Federal Bureau of Investigation in there. Some of them will have the Secret Service in there. A lot of law enforcement centric entities within the fusion centers across the country. We really looked at this and opened it up and said, you know, we need more than just that. We need that. Those are key partners. And we have those folks that come in and help us. Some of them are full time in there, some are part time, some are virtual. Mm-hmm. But then we also reached out, for example, to the consortium universities and said, you know, you're another key player for mm-hmm. us in this that we need to be sharing information with and right. receiving information from, brought them in. We've reached out to the business community and made sure that the business community had their access into it as well. And we really are focusing, our focus really is with the WRTAC, is to get good information, useful information, and create valuable product for folks to help them understand what some of those threats are that are out there that may face them. And everybody has a little different view on that. Our public health folks and our fire and emergency medical services, we do roll call products and in-service training products for the firefighters to talk about things like K2 and what's going on with that and what does that mean to the firefighter that shows up, or the EMT or paramedic right. that shows up on the ground. What do they need to be concerned about?
Make sure they don't touch anything that's going to cause them harm.
That's right. And so we're doing, you know, good detailed tactical products like that, as well as, you know, we're doing full-on threat assessments for major events that we do here in the city as well. So I think the use of the Fusion Center here were an oddity. There's only three other Fusion Centers in the country, the last I checked, that were either housed in the Emergency Management Agency or a part of the Emergency Management Agency doing all hazards type of approach.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of a different view.
Okay.
It's been received real well. The last report to Congress on fusion centers, they cite different products mm-hmm. that were of value that came from different fusion centers across the country. You know, there were, the average is about five from the states that they cited in there. We had 15. So, wow. The guys and gals are doing a great job in that area, and I think they're serving the residents of the district really well.
It sounds as if you guys are being innovative with your approach. Do you think that this will take hold with other states in terms of the kind of the all hazards approach? I mean, a lot of the fusion centers were kind of brought up to deal with that terrorism threat. You know, and that was kind of the initial dynamic of the fusion center. Do you think that the mindset is starting to change a little bit now? Are people kind of maybe using you guys as a benchmark?
I wouldn't necessarily say they would use this as a benchmark. I think some of the product and some of the way we do our analysis and analytical products around the all hazards environment is one that folks are interested in. But you know, fusion centers really are unique to the customers that they're serving.
Right. Yeah.
In many areas, that is that terrorism front, and it's grown out of the law enforcement community, mm-hmm. and that's what they're looking for from okay. it, from a governor's perspective in another state. You know, I was lucky enough to be in a place to help. Design and roll out the Maryland Coordination Analysis Center as well when I was mm-hmm. in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a little bit of a different focus up there, more terrorism, more law enforcement focus. Right. And rightfully, because that's what we were looking for at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was fortunate enough to talk to the National Fusion Center Association conference yesterday. And in talking with them about, you know, or excuse me, day before yesterday, in talking with them about, you know, looking forward 5 years, where do we see fusion centers in the country? I think like emergency management, it's a new field. They have to get down the processes and policies and practices so that there's a growth pattern for folks in that arena.
Right, right.
That not only goes from the state and local environment, but then opening into the federal environment mm-hmm. around this intelligence community type mm-hmm. of thing. And I think they're looking at that pretty hard. And so from that aspect, I think we've done some good work here in the district, and we've been fortunate with the folks that are really looking at how do we build that pathway for folks mm-hmm. To go from an entry level analyst up to really, you know, higher positions within right. the intel
right.
community.
That's a kind of a field that you're now developing, the career development, like you said, a path for people. And it's not just a fusion center analyst. What does that mean? You know, what do you need to bring to the table to be a fusion center analyst? I mean, right. that's probably just now starting to come out as an actual career field.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to swing us over, Chris, into the emergency management side of it. You know, when you think about this and you think about what the threats are in the D.C., of course, we're always concerned about terrorism.
Right.
There's a criminal dynamic. But when we talk about kind of the acts of God or natural threats and things like that, what are some of the things that kind of, you know, are we mainly concerned about? I know we've had the snow and everything else, but what are some of the things that you see?
So we have 18 hazards that mm-hmm. we really focus on. And those have come out of many, many hazard and vulnerability assessments or threat hazard and vulnerability assessments that we've done over the years. And the major things, you know, terrorism is, of course, there. Flooding is a large one for us, you know, all the natural storms that you would have between snow and, you know, all the things that we deal with here in the city. You know, civil disturbance is another one that we look at. We, you know, knock on wood, we've been really lucky here. We have a good community policing going on, so we've been very lucky here to not have to get to that level. But, you know, those are things that we look at and we plan towards. So we've done extensive work. We actually have created a district preparedness system. Starting about 3 years ago, that really codifies and puts in place all of those planning efforts that we've done so that folks can really tie the things together from our district response plan to our hazard-specific plans all the way down to the individual SOPs and general orders that that our folks on the ground, whether it be the police department, fire department, or others, work through. So there's a good stitching of saying, okay, you start from here, and then it may escalate up to here, and how do we deal with that, and what mm-hmm. do we do, and how is the city prepared to do that? You know, in some cases, it's the plans, it's the writing down of that. In many cases, it's the planning process so folks understand where they fall into that and developing those work products for folks to be able to work off of in that environment. But we have the system in place, five key plans within there, across prevention, protection, mitigation, response, and recovery. Those are all in place, and many of the subsequent plans that come off of there are in place for it. And it really comes down to how do you operate when something does happen.
Right.
And that's another thing we focus very hard on over the last 3 years, to say, how do we instill in the city a process where everybody understands where their role is when something's happening? again, I'll go back to our first responders on the ground. They know their jobs on the ground. But then how do they, when it starts to escalate, how do they plug in to the next level? So we've really looked at the incident command system. We have incident management teams in both fire and emergency, both fire and emergency medical services, as well as in the police department. And then we, at our emergency operations center for the city, we follow those principles as well of ICS, and we have what we call an incident support team up there, and it's all the same structure and it's all the same thing.
Right.
So it's really clear for unity of command and unity of effort that we have that all the way through. And folks understand it all happens in, as I mentioned earlier, that unified command type of environment. It's a team approach.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want to keep on talking about it because, you know, emergency management is talking about kind of resiliency, you know, how you, of course, prepare for these things, but then also how you come back off it. And then also talk about the business planning dynamics. What are you doing with the business community? And also, how do we prepare the individual? How do, you know, the 72 hours, I saw that on your website, you know, how do we have people kind of, you know, prepared to deal with certain things for, you know, a number of hours before systems can get up and running? I want to talk about all that with you, Chris, when we get back. We're talking to Chris Geldart. He is director of DC's Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency. If you have not been on their website, I recommend you go on their website, DCHSEMA, and you'll find it in Google. Just type that on in. It's going to come on up to the DC site, and you got a whole bunch of resources on there for a citizen, for a business person, for law enforcement, for fire, whoever the case is, a great number of resources you can use at any point in time. But we're talking about how do you prepare for certain things in the districts, whether it be emergencies or whether it be homeland security issues, how do you make sure you're ready for these things in order to not only just survive, but also then thrive after you survive? We're talking about these things. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about emergency management, talking about Homeland Security, talking about it from the D.C. side. We've been talking to the director of D.C.'s Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency, Chris Geldart. He's also the interim director of the 911 and 311 Center, the Office of Unified Command. And we're talking to him about a number of different things right now. Chris, you know, when we look at the dynamic of the public and engaging the public, not only the individuals and also the business, what efforts are you guys taking right now to make sure that people are prepared for any kind of incident?
Thanks, Derek. Yeah, you know, the community is our focus, right? If you look at every agency has a mission and a vision, and if you look at ours, when you get into it, we are resident focused. We did a lot of talking here about some of the things that some of the bigger things that we're doing, working with the region and the federal government and things like that. But we have 640 some odd thousand, and we're growing every day, residents here in the District of Columbia, and they're our primary focus. You know, the visitors and the federal employees and everybody else, the commuters that come into here, of course, they're our focus as well. Right. But in the end of the day, once those folks go home, it really is our residents that we have to be taken care of. A couple of things we do with that. We have our 72hour.dc.gov. That's out there that folks can go to. You get right to it from our website. If you go to hscma.dc.gov, go into there, find the 72-hour. That will let folks know a lot of great information of what they can do to be prepared. Because if you're individually prepared for things to happen, then as we're going out there and trying to respond to people's worst days, you know, that makes it easier for us to get to those that really do need help. And there are many of us out there, you know, we can, if we're prepared and we do the things we need to do, we make a kit, we have a plan, we know where our family members are, we know where to link up with each other. If something does happen, we've got some, you know, some storage type of foods available and water available for us to get through 72 hours. That allows those first responders to get out to those folks that really do have that need, that may have had their house completely destroyed or their apartment building completely destroyed. So the better prepared the individual resident is in the District of Columbia, the better we're all going to be.
You know, when you look at it, and you know, D.C. is kind of a melding of the seven districts. Some districts are definitely a lot more resource intense than others. You know, where your agency is housed is the seventh district. You know, 6, 7 are probably, you know, some of the more kind of although they're changing, they're still maybe some of the more challenging in terms of saying people have kits. You know, when you look at it, do you look at it from that dynamic to kind of say, you know, what district has the most challenges and everything else?
We do. We look at it from a couple aspects. Okay. So we look at it from what's the hazard that may affect that particular ward or district.
Got it.
And so, you know, if we have, for example, down towards our southwest side and southwest waterfront area and around the monumental core, our southwest area is susceptible to flooding. Now, that's flooding from riverine flooding. If we had heavy rains and the rivers came up. But our areas like Bloomingdale, LaDroit Park, traditional areas where we get overland flooding. So if you have heavy rains, we have a lot of flooding that happens in those areas. So, you know, we put things in place to ensure that we know a heavy rainstorm's coming. There are certain things that, you know, depending on the size of that rainstorm, if we're going to get an inch of rain an hour for a couple hours, we know that that could play some havoc in those areas like Bloomingdale and LaDroit Park.
Right.
And we'll go up there and make sure that our DC water crews are out there, our DPW crews are out there, cleaning out the catch basins and doing things like that. So my point really is, from the perspective of the hazards that are out there, we really do take a look at the different wards and different areas in the district and what they're susceptible to.
Are you talking to the ward commissioners? I mean, I just wanted to even ask, are you talking to them on a regular basis?
Absolutely. Yeah. At the same time, we really do look at the makeup of the different wards. Mm-hmm. And we say, you know, if we do have a citywide type of thing, for example, if Hurricane Joaquin had come where it was originally intended on coming when it first started, it would have been a pretty bad couple weeks for the District of Columbia. So we were looking really hard on, you know, what are those things? We're breaking out our ward plans. We're breaking out our overarching city plans. And we're saying, okay, what are the things we know we need to do for Ward 8, Ward 7? What are the things we need to do up in wards 1, 2, and 3? You know, there's different things that we need to bring to the residents of those areas to meet the needs of the community. And we're weighing all of that together. And, you know, it truly is making sure we get the right resources to the right people at the right time so that their lives are impacted as least as possible, or at least we're helping them get back to the road to recovery. And one of the main ways we do that, and you brought this up as well in the beginning, is getting business back to business. If I can get a mom and pop grocery store back into business in the first day after a disaster happens, now folks can go to the store and get the milk and the bread and the things that they need.
Right.
If
you
I can
turn
get
back life to normal again.
That's right. That's what's the quickest way to get people back to normal is bring those businesses back. We have a business emergency management operations center that's co-located with our city's operations center, emergency operations center. And we work with the supply chain folks to make sure that as we do run into times when we have a large citywide disaster, our derecho storm is a good example of that. We're working with those folks to make sure we're getting the food in, we're getting the power back up, we're getting the gasoline into the stations, and we're providing those things so that people can take care of themselves again and get back to normal. One of our primary things always is getting schools back up and running.
Okay.
The quicker we get the schools back up and running, kids are going to school again. That does many things for us here in the city. The city school system actually feeds a large population of our children in the city. So that's a major one for us to make sure we get back as well.
You know, as you think about things, and that kind of swings into kind of the unified command, I mean, in terms of communications, you know, when you're trying to get information out to people, I mean, what are you recommending? Are you, you know, recommending that they use a 911, 311? Are you recommending text services? Are you recommending that they monitor your, you know, I mean, how should they get information from you? And then also, how do they report information to you?
Yeah, two things, primary things I would say is first, for folks to go to our 72 hours.
Okay.
So that they can go there from our website, and that'll give them information how to be prepared to start. That'll also give them information to how to sign up for our Alert DC. Alert DC is our main place where we're sending alerts and messages out, and we probably send out thousands a day.
And I get them. I'm set up on it. I see all the messages. But it's good information, though.
Right. And I would recommend for folks when they go in there to really go through and select those areas they want to receive information on, because we do stuff for schools, the DMV, transportation, weather. There's all sorts, silver, amber alerts, all of that. You can select in and out of each of those. So folks can go in and customize it for themselves so they're not. I talked to a person that actually signed up for Alert DC after I talked to them, and they called me up and they said, "Hey, my phone won't stop going off."
Right.
You said, if you go back into the website, you can select off those things you probably don't want to know about every day. Yeah. But being connected to the system, if we have large emergencies going on, even if you're just selected in to receive one alert stream, you will receive the major alerts that we send out. So definitely alert DC. And that's at alertdc.dc.gov if you didn't want to go through our website. Folks could sign up for that. The other mechanism you mentioned earlier is our app, which is available through the iPhone or through Google Play for the Android. And that will our alerts come through on there as well.
Okay.
But there's also a lot of good information in there on preparedness, evacuation routes. Literally, if you're on there, you go to evacuation, it'll tell you where you are in the city and the best route to get out of the city for an evacuation. So a lot of good information on there. And I would suggest folks to go in there, just put in DC HSEMA into either one of those stores and you'll be able to pull it up. It's a free app for folks. So that's a couple of mechanisms. Of course, we work with all the district agencies and their public information officers. When we have a large disaster, we create what we call a Joint Information Center, our JIC, and that's located out at HSEMA as well within our the city's Emergency Operations Center. And that's the major place where we'll be pulling information from across the city and across the board so that we'll have multiple voices with one message coming out from the city. Working for the mayor.
Yeah, when you think about it, and we've got to close it up, if you had to kind of give maybe just maybe two or three words of advice before we get out of here, what would you say, Chris?
I would say two things to folks. One, sign up for Alert DC, get our app. That's how you're going to be informed. Have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Work a plan for yourself and for your family in case something does happen. And the last thing I would say, and I say this every chance I get, take care of your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing we could ask for. Because when we have a bad thing happen in the city, our resources are going to be stretched.
Right.
I know next door, I have Miss Johnson. Miss Johnson is 92 years old and lives on her own.
Right.
Feeds the birds every morning, the squirrels. Right. I see her out there every morning. Yeah. When we have things that happen, I go knock on her door and I say, Miss Johnson, anything that you need, is there anything I can do for you?
Right.
Neighbor takes care of neighbor. That's going to make our city stronger.
Chris, that was some powerful words to leave off with. We're going to have you back because there's so much we didn't cover. We covered a lot, and we got a lot of good message out there, but I definitely want to have you come back and continue to talk about these different things in terms of educating people about Homeland Security and really about emergency management and taking care of each other. And like you said, the 72 hours and taking care of yourself so that when things do happen, you can bounce right back up and get back to normal and get the city back to normal as well. Thank you for coming on FedEx.
Thank you, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.